I want my country back, and the country I'm talking about would not tolerate this nonsense.
But now you have a choice. There is a party that will represent you and stand up for common sense.
And when the dam bursts, it will do so spectacularly.
I overturned the biggest ever Conservative majority of 25,500 people.
But if Britain is broken, then logically, Britain needs reform.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the fifth edition of the Reform Party podcast. Today I'm going to go back to our usual format, having slipped Malcolm in last week. And the point of this is to showcase the kind of people that we have in Reform and to try to convince you that in the event that the polls come true and we are elected into government, that we have the people in place ready and willing to go. And today I'm going to introduce you to our Simon Evans from West Lancs.
Thanks again. Thank you for having me.
Simon, thanks very much for coming down.
Pleasure.
Could we start off just by telling a little bit more about yourself? What's your background? Where were you brought up?
Yeah, I was originally born in Bristol many years ago, as I reached just weeks away from my 60th now. I grew up in a quite large town called Swindon in Wiltshire. But I moved to Lancashire over 20 years ago. So I'm an adopted Lancastrian and love the county. And I've lived and worked there. I've brought up three children. I'm also bringing up a six-year-old, which keeps me busy, let alone reform. So, yeah, I've been in the Northwest and particularly Ormskirk and West Lancashire for over 20 years.
And what have you done in terms of work?
In work, I work in the criminal justice and social justice sector, and I have done for many years. I deal with antisocial behaviour. I'm a senior officer for dealing with cases from neighbourhood squabbles to actual gang crime and so on and so forth. And I originally started off many years ago as a social worker and then moved into youth justice and now more wider spectrum of criminal justice for many years. I worked for the Home Office when David Blunkett was the Home Secretary, and my role was to set up new courts that were based on an American model across the country, which was very exciting, and we got to travel to New York quite a lot, which was very nice. Professionally I've been busy, still am.
So what are you currently doing then?
I currently work for a local authority, and I head up an anti-social behaviour unit, which is a joint unit with police and council staff. So I deal with offenders of anti-social behaviour, and that's a very broad spectrum because we do deal with county gangs and regional gangs as well.
You mean drug stuff?
Drug gangs, yeah, as well. With reform, I've been leading on the grooming gangs and rape gangs, as some call them, and I've been working with directly with victims of these gangs from particularly Rotherham and Rochdale and others, which has been an eye-opener. And I wrote a legal paper, proposed new legislation for reform of how we tackle these gangs and how we help victims of these gangs. And that was adopted just before the general election by Richard Tice, and that went into our national manifesto, and it's still there. So I'm very proud of that, because that we need radical change, not only in that field, but all over, but particularly in that field, because I don't know about anyone else, I'm sick to death of watching people from local authorities or the police or the agency standing on the steps of courts or town halls saying, we've learned the lessons. We clearly have not learned the lessons. The fact that we're not having a national inquiry shows we haven't learned the lessons. The fact that we keep trolling out the same kind of legislation and process to allegedly protect people. We haven't. It will happen again. It's still happening. So that's something I'm very passionate about. And I recently spoke at our regional conference with Nigel Farage regarding this, and with one of the victims who very bravely came to Chester.
I was there.
Right. Okay. And I am proud that, and it's true what I said on stage, is the police haven't listened, the government haven't listened, local authorities haven't listened. The only people that listened were Nigel Farage and Richard Tice, and they put it into our manifesto. And that's why I'm with Reform. Not just that thing, but because the pragmatic problem solving, it makes sense. Let's do it.
Yeah, they listened.
Yeah,
yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. I listened yesterday to a podcast, Trigonometry, which is one of my favourite podcasts.
All right.
And they had an interview with the. I'll put this in a link to it in the show notes on this podcast.
Right.
But they had they were interviewing the chap from GB News who broke with the documentary a week or two back, which really broke the whole thing. And there's quite a lot of new revelations in that, which are really interesting. So I'll put a link to the in the show notes.
That's excellent.
So you've been working with the police and judiciary for quite a while.
Yes.
One of the things that's come up in the last few weeks to do with both the police and the judiciary is the fact that there seems to be different tiers of policing and different tiers of justice.
Absolutely.
According to who you are. How did that come about, do you think?
Well, it's escalated since Labour have come into power, and escalated to a level that I never thought we would see. I'll go back a bit. I've worked with the courts and the police and with local authorities in terms of tackling offenders and supporting victims. And I knew before even two-tier care came in that our system is completely flawed. I mean, we have a system now where the courts are a place for lawyers to go and make money.
Mm.
It's not to do with justice. So the word justice is completely wrong. What they're doing there is law. And lawyers are making huge amounts of money. Some very well intended, absolutely no qualms about that. But some who are there just purely to make the buck. And we have got to change our system. Now, it's been compounded and got much worse since Labour came to power, and all issues of this freedom of speech and people going to prison for writing hurty words on Facebook or social media or wherever. I totally get if somebody is saying, go out and burn down this mosque or go out and cause violence. Yeah, okay, absolutely you should be held to account. But the majority of people who have been sent to prison haven't had that. They've just said their opinions, and maybe it might be things that people find offensive. Well, do you know what? In a world of freedom of speech, a country that's meant to be beholding freedom of speech, we should be able to say hurty words pretty much as we like, unless you're making it personal. And we've lost that massively. And it really, really concerns me that we have this two-tier justice system, this two-tier policing system that is now on an Orwellian level.
I see all that, but what I was trying to get at is how it came about. Why is it that a judge who perhaps 5 years ago would have sentenced somebody to 5 years imprisonment suddenly seems to be doing it for 1 year or 10 years according to the political circumstances of the crime?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. The political circumstances have become involved in our court system and our judiciary system, and it should not. And it never has been up to this point. Now, I've worked with a lot of judges. I've been involved in collective of appointing some judges in a previous job when I worked at the Home Office. And at no stage should politics be involved. And judges don't want that, I don't think. But I think they're getting pressure.
So you think from the politics. It's not that the judges are doing this on their own back. It's not that they believe.
No, I think
they're being pressured to
I don't know if they're being directly pressured. I'd find that quite amazing, and that would be, I think, a massive shock if we found that.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, but I think through the media and through the rants of some politicians, they are being influenced. And I've got to say, our level of politics and our caliber of politicians is really quite worrying, and I think this is where it all stems from. You know, we really are being led, the blind leading the blind, for the want of a better word. The caliber of our politicians in Parliament has gone down and down and down over the last decade or so, and I think that's what's leading to judges and to courts being influenced by people who know no better and have no real thought about the higher echelons of freedom of speech and clear justice that this country has beheld for many, many decades, many years. And I think that really, really is under threat massively. I mean, just slightly going off key, but looking at no-brainer Angela Rayner setting up this Islamic phobia committee, or whatever she calls it, is a very, very dangerous path, and it's a similar path to what we've gone down with the justice sector. It's a very dangerous path to go down. Why she's picking out one particular religion against any other religion, and could lead to quite easily blasphemy laws, and it's the same. It's the same process, the same thought process that's going through, particularly in Labour, of this absolute desire. It's in their DNA to try and control. And that's what they're doing with the justice sector. Mm. That's what they're doing in local and national government. Give you another example. We're standing in West Lancashire in the Lancashire council elections on the 1st of May. Now, we have a memo from Angela Rayner to her Labour colleagues in councils that is re-designating what is green land. Now, the county that I live and work in and will be standing in, West Lancashire, is a very rural area, beautiful countryside. And because of this redesignation, again, for this control from central Labour, they're looking now at building over 3,000 houses, which we don't need in West Lancashire, on land that previously was green land. And again, it's coming from this central control from Labour of diktats of doing this and doing that.
Yeah, well, we have exactly the same in the world. That our local plan is being changed to, I think, have another 44,000 houses.
But it's going back to what you were saying, Ken, about the justice sector, and it's the same mentality of.
I just find it puzzling, though, that you know, a judge who's come up, obviously a well-educated man who's come up through the system and so on, he gets to the point where he's a circuit judge or whatever, and then that man feels political pressure, which is not even direct. It must be kind of in the background pressure to influence his sentencing and the way he behaves in court. I just find that very surprising.
I find it surprising. I've worked with judges in my professional capacity, and they are fervently independent and absolutely quite rightly so.
Yeah.
So to how this is happening and why it's happening, how on earth can somebody go to prison for having an opinion that they put on social media, and yet we have other people who are committing heinous, awful crimes, or even lesser crimes, but physical crimes where they've actually hurt a individual, and they're coming out? Labour released thousands of prisoners to make room for the people who have opinions. I mean, that's just nuts.
To make room for the people that were about to be arrested for the following the riots following the Southport.
I'll
come back to that if you don't mind, because I'm right in saying you live in Ormskirk.
Yes, yes.
Which is just a stone's throw from Southport. So I've got a few things I want to come back to on that. But just while we're on the courts and the judiciary, you mentioned that there was a huge amount of wastage in the court system.
Yeah.
I'll just throw in my little anecdote, which I
think go on,
When I was in business, I took the Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs to the first tier tribunal in Birmingham.
Good man.
And then this was during COVID time, so I never actually got to go to the court in Birmingham, but I was all done on Zoom.
Yeah.
So I represented myself because I didn't think there was an awful lot of chance of winning the case, to be honest. But I enjoyed reading up the background bits of law and so on.
Sure.
So I ended up, as I say, in this court, and so there was the judge, there was two barristers who were being employed by HMRC, and the first question I got was, I got an email through that said, we're planning to set the court time for 2 days.
Right.
Will that be enough? And I thought about it, and I thought, what I've got to say here will take me about 20 minutes.
Yes.
So I didn't pick up at the time the significance of this. So as I suspected, my evidence took 20 minutes. The whole thing was done before lunchtime on the first day.
Mm.
But I'm guessing that the judge and all the counsel were all being paid for 2 days. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, yes. It's
a scam.
It's a gravy train.
A scam against the taxpayer. And I felt much less. I won the case, by the way, but I felt actually bad about winning it because I'd wasted all this taxpayer's money.
Yeah, I've been in court many times when, in my professional role, we've been prosecuting cases. Now, I don't get to prosecute cases, although they're my cases. I've worked on them for 6 months to a year or whatever it is. And you know this case inside out, back to front, left and right. And you know the people involved as well. And they know and trust you. And then barristers are brought in and they say words. And I listen to these words and I think, well, I could say that. I know this case. I know it inside out. I can speak English. And they are paid telephone numbers.
Mm.
And you think, what on earth has that person come in for an hour to do that for? It's just a huge gravy train. And it's like many things. We've got this gravy train in the justice system. We've got this gravy train in local authorities and in councils, and that's one of the reasons that attracted me to reform. Because I'll be honest with you, I was a Labour voter, 10 years ago or so, and then I was just in adrift for 10 years until I came across reform, and I just looked at it and I thought, this is common sense.
Mm.
This is what I've been saying. And we have got to smash this gravy train which keeps people down there and keeps other people up here earning shed loads of money. We need to spread it out a bit, spread it out more than a bit, actually. I've seen so many things in courts, I've seen so many things in local authorities, and that's one thing that's really important to me. Is we're standing in Lancashire and we've got fantastic candidates who are normal people who are not on this gravy train but actually believe in what they are saying and what they want to do. Now, I look at our patch where we are in West Lancashire, and we've got what we call double hatters. So we've got a district council and we've got Lancashire County Council. Now, that's going through lots of changes, which is well advertised. But you've got people, councillors, who've been there for decades, who sit on West Lancashire District Council, earning £15,000, £16,000, £17,000 a year, and they sit on Lancashire County Council, earning £15,000, £16,000. So they're making quite a nice little living there. It's not mega bucks, but I'm sure there's plenty more that goes on top of that. And they are lying. They are lying to the people. They are not interested in what's good for people and what's good for that area. And maybe they started out well-intended, but now they're on this gravy train. And this is where we need to smash through, and we are going to smash through. And we need to change how governance, how justice, how all these things are done. So it's not about making money. It's about doing the right thing.
Mm.
And that's exactly where reform comes in. It's about, again, you know, we get accused of being right-wing. I have no truck with this right wing, this left wing, you know, left wing loony or right wing fascist, so on and so forth. I had it so many times, as I'm sure you have, during election time, the abuse that people get. I don't believe in left wing, I don't believe in right wing. That's a made up media thing so that it can easily box people off. Same before, when I was no fan of Margaret Thatcher, but when she came up with the buying of your own council house, I remember thinking, I think that's a good idea. And when Blair came up with Sure Start centres, I thought, that's a good idea. Now, does me agreeing with buying your council house make me right wing? No, of course it doesn't. Does me believing in Sure Start centres make me left wing? No, of course it doesn't. It's about common sense politics, and that's what reform is about. And that's what I am, a common sense politician.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I honestly think that right and left wing, the whole concept of that,
it's
actually obsolete, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of the current political debate.
Yeah. And we need We need to grow up in this country, and we need a grown-up media, and we don't have that. And we really don't.
We're not going to get that, frankly.
No, we're not.
But, I mean, the good thing about it is at least we do have alternative media sources.
Yes.
And it's amazing how that is starting to come through in terms of the electorate.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I think more people are watching, you know, GB News and talk radio now than they are the BBC and Channel 4.
Yeah, and about time too. But the fact, I mean, they give out figures, don't they? Because I watch it regularly, and they give out figures of how they're beating Sky and BBC combined and so on and so forth. And that is reflective of what's going on in our country. This huge shift from the legacy parties to Reform, and we've just seen the polls of Reform at 29%.
Did you see the election results from yesterday?
From Baxendale.
There was three. Three we took over from Labour.
That's right.
And one tendering. We won from the Conservatives. Yeah. I was looking at the four. We had never stood there before.
Right.
So the first time we ever stood tendering by election, we got 45% of the vote.
Wow.
Conservatives were down to 30.
Yeah. It's all moving to Reform.
Absolutely.
And the more and more people wake up to this common sense approach, the more people will start watching GB News and the talk radio, the more we'll start talking to Reform, and the less. Because I had this through the general elections and the district council I'd stood in last year as well. The less people will call us racist. The less people will not understand or try not to understand. We'll always have a hardcore of Labour who don't like us. You know, that's life. But people are starting to understand what we're about. And they're starting to realise we're not this right-wing extreme part with absolutely nothing to do with that at all whatsoever. So yeah,
you and I both know that.
We do. I since I've joined Reform, which is 2 years, that's all I've been in Reform, 2 years, and I've been to, as we were saying before, Doncaster Conference, Birmingham. I've been to regional events. I've hosted a conference myself and so on and so forth. I have never met more common sense, intelligent, switched on, normal folk in all my life. Be that candidate,
and,
be
and
that
no members. Racists.
No racists.
Absolutely.
I've not met one racist in my life.
I said the other week on this podcast when the Channel 4 did the scoop, the gotcha thing on Nigel during the election campaign, where they got an actor in the film seeing all sorts of stuff. Now, as I said, I knew at the time that could not be true.
Yeah.
Because I'd been already involved with Reform for a year or so, and of all the interactions I've had with everybody I'd ever met, I've never met a racist.
No, I haven't. Not one. And it isn't racist, but what drives me crazy working in local government and national government as I have is the equality, diversity and inclusion nonsense that goes on. We love local authority, and this is something we are going to drive out of Lancashire immediately. Love to put everybody in boxes. Everything we do.
If you've ever been to any council meetings, you'll know that every proposal, whatever it is, has got to go before it even gets going, has got to pass two hurdles.
Yeah.
It's got to decide whether or not it's got any impact on the equality legislation and also on the climate legislation.
That's
got to be answered before it.
Exactly. I mean, I've worked for local authorities and for national government, and all the time they want to know, am I white? Am I black British? Am I Asian British?
And of course, the even to ask those questions is
offensive.
Racist.
Yeah, it's offensive.
This is what's so galling.
But I always put down I'm mixed race. Now I'm clearly a white heterosexual British fella, but I put down I'm mixed race because. Yeah. And they say no, you can't be. And I said I can. I said because this country has been invaded over the years by the French, the Germans, Italians, you name it. We're very mixed. So
I just refuse to answer the question.
Yeah. But this is the point, and I saw Nigel speak about this. Who cares what sexual orientation you are, what colour you are, what creed you believe, what religion you are? We're interested in your character, and if you want to be here and contribute to this country, end of.
Well, Trump seems to have made big strides in America. He's just swept the whole thing away in one go.
Now, I wasn't a Trump fan 9 months ago, and then when I saw him doing those executive orders, I just thought, wow, isn't that fantastic? That is actual action there and then. So I just common sense stuff again as well, you know, brilliant. Yeah.
Going back to West Lancs, you said that the council was full of appalling people, which is not unusual. They all are.
No, that is.
Is it at least solvent?
Is it what, sorry?
Is it solvent?
Well, good question. West Lancashire District or Borough Council, I think, may well be. But Lancashire County Council, which is, let's remember, we are standing for Lancashire County Council. We happen to be in the West Lancashire area of that. West Lancashire Council, Lancashire County Council, we discovered just 2 days ago, has loans and debts of £670 million. Now, I mean, why on earth is any council borrowing that amount of money?
Do you know what type of debts these are and who they're
owed? We're looking into it, but they're very concerned about the interest rates, which I'm sure they're quite pleased about the quarter percent drop.
One of the investigations I've done in Wirral Borough Council is to do with what they call lender option, borrower option loans. Now, these were loans which were generally taken out back in the 2000s. And I think I'm right in saying that Wirral's got 170 million, but Wirral's quite a small authority.
You've
got 170 million, but you say there's...
670 million. That's a massive amount.
I would be willing to bet that a lot... I mean, you can easily find out. There's a very good website where I'll say... Again, I'll put a link in the show notes to it. But it explains the whole... It's quite an intricate and pretty nerdy subject, actually.
Quite a nerdy fella, so
But it's worth looking into, because I still think these were basically missold to stupid directors of finance and local authorities all up and down the country. And they've tried to they've tried to challenge it previously in court. Various councils have said, you know, these were clearly missold. I want to get out of the loan. And so far it's not been done, but I having looked at the law on it, I think people have attacked it in quite the right way, so I still think there's some scope for doing that. So I'll put the link to the Lobo loan scandal in the way, in the show notes again, and you can have a look at it. But it will quickly tell you, you just put in your council and it will tell you exactly who what loans you've got, who the money's owed to, what the interest rates are, etc.
Well, once we once we're elected, one of our pledges is that we're going to initiate an immediate audit of the whole council. And not only are we going to find out the financial state of the council, which won't be difficult, but we're going to find out actually who is responsible for this as well. Because it's, you know, I said before, I mean, I was no Thatcher fan, but do you know what we are going to go do is what she used to do, is go back to basic good financial management, good housekeeping, as she used to call it. And we're also going to drive out so much waste in every single council, but particularly in Lancashire, with the stuff we were talking about before, the equality and inclusion targets and so on and so forth, the officers who are on mega bucks. I mean, you would have just seen recently the West Yorkshire Police diversity budget that was found on the Freedom of Information, 1.3 million. Why are we spending 1.3 million on this stuff?
For one force.
Yeah. Now let's add that up around the country, because you've got the Mets, you've got Manchester, you've got big police forces. You're talking at least £70 million worth of money there.
And that's just the police. That's the tip of the iceberg.
We've put in requests in Lancashire for the National Health Service, same information, and for the local authority as well, to see what's going on there. There will be millions upon millions upon millions wasted. So coming back to that loan and the debts that councils are getting in, there are ways and means of saving so much money.
So you're saying you don't really know whether Lancashire County Council is solvent or not?
No, and I don't think anyone does. Well, I think if you've got 670 million worth of loans, call it debts, whatever, because it is a debt, you're not solvent. You know, I mean, I don't know if there are anywhere near getting a Section 114 notice yet, a bankruptcy notice, but 670 million, you're going to be fairly close. And it's just the wrong way to manage a statutory body.
Getting a Section 114 depends on the auditor. They will have an auditor, obviously.
It depends on the auditor
coming up with a report that says, just a minute, you know, you are now insolvent. You're going to be insolvent. So therefore...
Well, Lancashire Council's budget is around nearly 1.1 billion. I mean, we're talking some big numbers here. If you've got loans of 670 million, then you're getting pretty close to being bankrupt, aren't you? I mean, if you just look at it at a personal level... You would normally think that, but
then the UK has got debt equivalent to the whole of its GDP.
Well, and unfortunately,
don't want to sound down and mopey, but you know that's going to get even worse. We will be bankrupt within a year.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. I said it before the general election, during, and now. And I think I'm no mathematician. I'm no economist, but you just got to look at what Labour are doing. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They have no idea, these teenagers, of how to manage a budget, let alone a national budget, and we will be sadly bankrupt within the next 12 months. And that's at a national level. I think it's at a local level.
So you think we're going to have to bring in what, the IMF?
I think there's two things. I think the UK government will have to go cap in hand to the IMF, to the World Bank, and help rescue us, because they've made an absolute pig's ear of this. And I also starting to believe that this is an intentional process to make us go bankrupt so that we can go to Europe.
Mm.
So Labour can go to Europe and say, can we come back in, please? Can you help us? And so I hope that's not true. I don't think Starmageddon and Rachel from Accounts are intelligent enough to have a plan, but maybe that is their plan. But we are going backwards financially, be it national government or local authority, and we can stop it. We can stop it, and we can turn it around.
It is slightly worrying, and I get worried that they're almost doing everything so obviously wrong,
yeah,
that it's deliberate in some way.
Yeah.
And that is a concern, I think. Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned about that.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned that we can't bounce back. And we had Nick Goulding in here the other week, and he was saying...
Quiet chap.
he was saying, don't worry. He said, you know, the Germans bounced back after 1945 when the place was flattened and so on.
Yeah.
You know, we can bounce back given time. And I think he's probably right. So I think,
yeah,
assuming that as things are going, that we take over at the end of the decade, there should still be enough. And Nick was saying it's to do with the human capital, that the people of Britain, that there will be enough still there that we can recover. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, he's right about the human capital. We certainly got human capital. We've got human capital in its droves. But I think that's part of the problem, is with the mass immigration that we've had over the last, I give up all the figures and all the times, but you know, over 10 million people coming into the country. And again, it's going back to the lies that all the Westminster bubble politicians have been saying for years, is immigration really contributes to our country. Well, we now know through the OBS that's not true.
Yeah. I mean, you will accept though that we have got a demographic problem in the UK, that people of our age, somebody's got to pay our pensions.
Yes.
And there are not enough of the indigenous population, because the birth rate's so low.
Yeah.
There are not enough children or young people now to pay these pensions.
That's true to a degree, but this comes back to what we started about originally, about the gravy train and the corruption and the lying and just I think more than anything, actually, the pure incompetence of national and local government, which is what we have in our country, is I've been working since I was 16 years of age. It's difficult to believe I understand that I'm 60 fairly soon. But I've paid in my money. So, yes, we do need young people to pay in, but where is that money? Because national insurance is exactly what it's meant to be. It's meant to be put aside.
But you know as well as I do that the money was never put aside.
No, I know.
It's always been a Ponzi scheme. And you're right, that it's now that the fact that the demographics have changed, that's how the Ponzi scheme is being exposed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because had the demographics not changed, it could just have carried on. There's more people going to be working in the future. So therefore, it's only with the demographic change that the Ponzi scheme has been
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we missed here, Ken, was your sharp intake of breath when I said I'm nearly 60. But
no, I didn't. Did you say you used to be a stand-up comedian?
Yes, I used to be. Yeah, I'm not anymore. No. Evidently, why?
Jokes aren't working.
No, I know. I got the stage on that when I thought, I'm 55. I'm not going to break through now. I'll just give up. But yeah,
you stood in the general election for. Who did you stand in? West Lancashire?
Yeah, I stood in West Lancashire in the general election, and just prior, about 3 months before that, we had a district council
election.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because we only got 3% in the district council, and we'd only just really set up. Mm. We didn't have a branch then. It was me and the dog, and that was about it. And we got 3% in the district council. When it came to the general election, we came in at 18%.
Yeah.
So that's a massive jump.
And that's actually slightly above average for all the reform vote.
Yeah, it was 14%, I think, nationally.
Yeah.
So really pleased at that change. Now, we're coming up to the council election, and I think this is even far more important than the general election that has just been, because this sets the tone for the next general election.
Mm.
Now, I commissioned a professional company to do a poll, which has come in today. Now, we have in West Lancashire three big towns, Skemmersdale, Ormskirk and Burscough. Skemmersdale has always been staunchly Labour. We have an MP, a Labour MP, Ashley Dalton, who I think is beyond useless. And she voted for the removal of winter fuel allowance. She voted for...
They all did.
Yeah. She voted for the farmers' inheritance tax. She's backed the closure of our two swimming pools, two leisure centres in West Lancashire, which the council are getting rid of. So on and so forth. She's not for the people. She has nothing for the residents of West Lancashire. Now, it used to be around 50% Labour. In opinion polls, today's poll shows reform at 16%, Labour at 16%, 40% of people don't know, Tory at 5%.
Mm.
So going back just over a year from 3% to 18% in election, and now in opinion polls we're absolutely neck and neck with Labour. I think there's a massive sea change going on in West Lancashire. And that's something we've got to hit home over the next 3 months or so until the election day. Because again, I think it reflects the national picture. There's a massive move to, we're sick to death of this Westminster bubble politics that has been going on where again, talking about gravy trains. Rupert Lowe said recently, since he's been in Parliament for 7 months, and he said he cannot believe the low grade of our politicians.
The there, yeah.
He said it's frightening.
We had this conversation Sunday the other week, and you know, we were comparing the current cabinet and the current Labour politicians with the ones that came in when Tony Blair and Gordon Brown took over.
Yeah.
And when you look at the quality of the individuals, the calibre of the people, what they'd done before they became an MP, etc., etc., it's just chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
The current lot, and you know, that's why they can't run anything, why they'll be, you know, this current government will be so poor.
Yeah. I mean, I look at our local MP, Ashley, and she's
so basically did you stand
in career.
Did you stand against her then?
Yes, I did. And we had one husting
with
myself and with Mike Pendergast, who's the Conservative candidate, who's quite a nice fella. And it was bizarre.
Mm.
It was on for an hour, and we had set questions, which we had beforehand. We knew the questions were coming. We had 1 minute to answer, and then 2 minutes to rebuff. And it was just a joke. And nobody from the audience...
This is much more fun when you don't know what questions I'm going to ask you, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that's how it should be.
Yeah.
But I'm going to big myself up. I made mincemeat of the woman.
Mm.
Now, she's been a career politician all her life, as far as I can see. She's not worked in private industry or even local government or whatever.
She was in
no
care
experience.
Sector, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Local authority care sector.
But, you know... And serves nobody but like a lot of Labour serves nobody but themselves.
Mm.
I mean, making great money in Parliament, and doesn't really is not really interested in the nuts and bolts day to day issues that affect people. And that is a difference, a huge difference between reform.
That's what people are now finding out.
What's important is the potholes and the roads.
Not only don't you care about them, you never cared about them.
No, and you don't do anything. You can have all the great ideological debates you want in Parliament. It makes no difference to the roads being fixed. West Lancashire roads are absolutely one of the worst in the country. I mean, costing people money. I lost a car about 3 weeks ago purely because the place hadn't been dredged properly. and hasn't been, the drains haven't been cleared out, and there's water everywhere. So it's stuff like that. It's stuff like having jobs. It's having the development of companies in your local area. It's making sure your bins are collected at the right time. It's that boring stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the stuff that makes a difference. Now, that's what an MP should be dealing with, not with how the far up the tree and how far up Keir Starmer they can get.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
So you've got what? You're sitting, was it 8 seats you're standing for?
8 seats, yeah.
And you've got candidates in place for all of them?
We've got candidates in place. We are launching our manifesto on Monday evening. Where we've got the media turning up. We are doing a briefing and training process for all of our 8 candidates. We've got 5 of us who've been around for quite a while, know each other. We've got 3 brand new candidates,
right.
and they are, honestly, God, they are a breath of fresh air. One young man who's 25 who is so sharp, Ellis, and he's the future. Future reform.
This is it. I mean, the quality. We are currently interviewing because we've got no elections coming up,
no.
And won't have any elections on the world till 2027. Would you believe?
Right.
Which is a long way off.
It is.
But that gives what it does do is it gives us a lot of time to plan and prepare. So we've currently started a round of interviewing because we have 66 candidates, potential candidates
right.
on the world. And we're going to hope to stand 66.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is. So we've started the process. I think we've now interviewed about 30, 35.
Wow.
And the quality of the people who are coming forward. I was over there this morning, and said the chap going out, and our guy said, "See that guy that just went out?" He said he's in charge of a firm of solicitors. He's got 100 staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got, you know, this, that, and he's offering us his social media, just fantastic quality of people, so it's obviously the same all over.
Yeah, it is, and it bolsters you. It does. It makes you feel. It does make me feel humble. I mean, the like you say, the calibre. We've got a young lady called Ella who's going to be standing as well. Just been speaking to her 10 minutes before we came in here, and just the ideas she has and the enthusiasm and the drive is fantastic. But also, they're normal people. You know, they haven't been in the world of politics.
They've never wanted to be politicians.
No, they're just tired.
I've never aspired to be a politician in my life.
Me neither.
I stood for reform because I thought, at least I'm going to have to offer some kind of option to the local voters.
Yeah.
But I didn't want elected. I still don't want to be elected.
No,
but it was important that people had some choice.
Yeah, and it's a key message to people, whoever listened to this or from wherever, that actually, do you know what? If you're sick to death of this, don't be scared of standing up and coming forward to reform and saying, "I want to stand up." Even if you've never spoken publicly, if you've never put a leaflet out, do you know what? It's your thoughts and your views are very, very valid. And you'll find out very quickly, you're amongst friends. I mean, I remember going to my first reform conference in Doncaster and saying some things, and people said, "Yeah, you're right." I thought, "Oh my God, I've not been able to say it," because I've worked for a local authority. It's very PC, you know. And I've said nothing controversial, nothing horrible about anyone, but it's just great because you go, "Oh my God, I'm not alone." You know, these things that bug me bug loads of people. And
I think
valid.
What I'd like to do, because it's not a long now between now and me, is it?
No.
Time's going to fly.
Yeah, it is.
How about if we got your 8 candidates and got them on here?
That'd be fantastic.
And speak to them and introduce, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would also give them something that they can put on their own social media.
Absolutely.
And pass around. And, you know, these things on Facebook forums and so on can go very well. So
absolutely.
So we'll do that.
Yeah, definitely. That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Ken.
Right, just going back to, you mentioned the Southport thing, and I don't want to go into the detail of
because
it's people, I think, are trying to forget it.
Yeah.
But as but you are fairly close by.
We was 8 miles away.
8 miles away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how has it affected the people in the locality?
Well, I think firstly, which I don't think it's just the locality, I think everywhere, it's just utter disbelief. I mean, it's just who in their, and this is probably the key word, in their right mind, goes in and does that to people. And because I work in that area, and I work with police and what have you, I'm not going into details. They've told me some stuff that I just think, I just do not understand how anyone does this. And we have to remember, for whatever the Keir's done or not done, or whatever the local authorities have got wrong, or the police, or prevent and what have you, the responsibility for this lies with this individual who decided to do it. What a horrible, heinous, pathetic person. But unfortunately, we have more and more of them, and they cause real massive damage. And I have absolutely, as a parent of four children, I know people say this all the time, but it's true. I have absolutely no understanding how any parent can cope with that. I really don't. No, it's just
beyond.
It's, yeah, exactly. It's beyond comprehension. Mm. It really is.
But one of the interesting things, I think, and it's a little bit the same as the... I was listening to this podcast, as I said, on the rape gangs.
Yeah.
And what he was saying was that because of the background of the people, that they could go and carry out these horrific acts. But they would do it in groups because they weren't ashamed.
No.
They saw it as normal, as their right. As it,
absolutely.
And I got a bit of the same impression from the... Southport guy.
Yeah.
He was in court. He was smirking. He was, you know, he didn't feel as if he'd done anything wrong.
I know. I mean, I know from my work with the rape gangs that what you just said about that feeling it's their right is absolutely 100% true.
Mm.
Victims, I've worked with about 10 to 15 of those victims over the last just over a year, have been telling me that's exactly what they thought. These are our right. This is what we do with these young white girls because that's what they're there for.
Mm.
And that's what we use before we go off and do whatever we do in our life. But that's their given right. Now, the individual who committed this in Southport, obviously I don't know him, I've never met him, wouldn't want to. I'm pretty sure that's the same sort of psyche he has. What I do get from both sets, from both people involved in the grooming gangs and people involved with Southport, is frustration. Absolute frustration at the authorities, be it police or whoever, you know, particularly government actually, wish to level with us and tell us what's been going on and how things have happened. And I think, and I'm not excusing people using violence, but I think that's why the bubbling up of frustration happened in the summer. And I don't think we're away from that yet. Not just about Southport, but about the grooming gangs and other things that are going on in this country. There is a huge frustration, a huge swell of annoyance at why we're being kept in the dark.
Mm.
And that continues. And it has been the likes of Nigel Farage who have been raising that.
And do you think the attitude that Starmer took to it afterwards, when he immediately issued the edict that all anybody who, involved in the rioting or whatever, that we had to be come down on like a ton of bricks, etc. Do you think that's helped him in the end?
No, I mean, I think the very fact that he was in Southport yesterday and none of us knew he was there and he didn't advertise that he was in Southport, I think shows you how he thinks of it and how it's being perceived, because why wouldn't you let people know you were there? But he was there. All right, look, if people are rioting and they're smashing people and
attacking the police, defending
that. No, you've got to come down on that. But there's something that stinks. I don't know what, because I'm not on the inside, but there's something that stinks about the way the government have handled this.
Mm.
And again, people know that. They may not know the details,
the sense,
but they feel it. Yeah. And that is what's driving. And I think we're a long way over from getting over that yet.
Yeah, so on the Reform Party policies,
yeah,
can you tell me, is there any policy you disagree with?
Oh, that's a good question. I agree with about 99% of our policies.
I'm interested in the 1%, not the 99%.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through what the 1% is. I'm not a royalist, I'm a Republican. I don't think we've got a set...
I'm not sure we have a royalist policy.
No, we don't, no. I think I'm probably the minority in the party on that. and also, again, I don't know, I think Nigel might have turned on this, is I'm not in favour of capital punishment.
Right.
And again, there isn't a policy on that. But again, I think I may be in the minority on that. Apart from that, I can't really think of anything that I disagree.
The economic policies you're all on board with?
Yeah, yeah. Taxation. Much taxation, with our employment policies, with our national health policies.
Did you see Nigel getting attacked in the chamber the
other day? I did. And fervently so he was attacked. But, you know, he's quite right. The National Health Service is a really good example of what I'm talking about the inefficiency in our statutory bodies to deliver.
But we're not allowed to discuss reforming it.
Yeah, exactly. Because everyone says, oh, the angels are, the nurses are angels, and they all clap hands, and that's the end of the debate. Yeah. Well, actually,
people are still mentally banging their pots and pans together.
Absolutely, we get very sycophantic about the National Health Service. It's such a we've got quite a few members in our locally who are nurses or ex nurses. I'll give an example. During the general election, I had a phone call from a nurse at Blackpool Victoria Hospital. Mm. Why she phoned me, I don't know. I'm not in her patch, but anyway, she did, and she said, "What's happened at Blackpool is." All nurses have been training. Nurses are going through their training and are about to finish, and they're about to get their certificates mm-hmm. or whatever it is they get. They say, "Well done, you're a nurse now. Off you go and get into the National Health Service." In the meantime, they brought in a management consultant who appointed scores of nurses for Blackpool Victoria Hospital who were from, I might get the place wrong. I think it was Manila or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And therefore, there were no jobs there for these people who were just coming out of their training.
Well, I think I said in the podcast last week, and in fact, I've done a Freedom of Information request
to the
University Teaching Hospital in Liverpool.
Right.
Because exactly the same thing happened. A whole year's worth of nurses about to come out. And because the government had been giving them an extra £4,000 for every foreign nurse they employed, there was no jobs for them to go to. So these kids had gone through the nursing degree. The media says, "Yeah, we need more nurses."
Yeah.
And they'd gone through it all. Yeah. They'd racked up student debt.
Yeah.
And they now couldn't get a job in the profession.
Yeah. No, I'll give you a perfect example of why reform is so good, and so right. My mother, who not reform, who died last year at 93, and that's obviously sad, but that's obviously fine. She lived till 93, had a happy life, so on and so forth. She was one of the very, very first nurses into the NHS as a nurse and worked her whole life as a midwife. So 40, stroke 50 years as a midwife. And she said to me a few years ago, the reason, or one of the reasons the NHS has gone wrong, she said, is we used to train nurses on the ward with matron and so on and sister and so on and so forth, and now they're university trained. And she said, yes, you have to have a little bit of theoretical, but where you really learn your job is in the hospital on the ward, and that's the common sense approach, and that's one of the reasons we've gone wrong. We got in West Lancashire, we've got a lot of nurses who are members, and they will tell me they're so glad to be out of it purely because of not because of the nurses and not because of the frontline staff, but because of the waste. And they are saying there's millions upon millions just in Lancashire, let alone everywhere else, which is wasted on management consultancy and managers and bureaucracy. And that has got
so how do we get how do we get rid of that?
We drive out. We when we get a reform government, we say no more. We do what like Donald Trump has done. We just say no. You're not doing this.
Do you leave the structure in place as it is, but then just work at chipping away at various bits of waste?
Or? We get rid of the majority of managers, and we redirect that money to frontline services. Another example is how it isn't pragmatically being done in the NHS is the ambulances. Now, we all know, because it's reported weekly, the massive blockages on people getting out of ambulances and getting into hospital. So that's not a medical problem. It's not a money problem. It's a logistics problem.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah. And the only party that has said, we'll bring in logistics specialists to sort that out is reform.
But look at what you have to do before you can sort it out, because the reason that you have ambulances queuing up at the front of A&E is because there's no beds for the people in A&E to use, so they've nowhere to put them. Like you see, they put them on trolleys in the corridors. But the reason there's nowhere is because upstairs in the wards, there's nowhere for the generally elderly people to go into to social care. There's no spaces for them. The councils can't afford to and so the whole thing gets blocked up.
No,
but I still cannot understand why they have to why they can't have a much simpler method of whereby the ambulance crew can get rid of their patient, even if they are going into the corridor. Because what happens when they go into the corridor, the ambulance crew has to stay with them.
Yeah.
And can't then go out on another job.
Yeah. It's just brainless. But also, I take issue with some of the things that we're saying, because I can go two prime examples, and I bet this happens all over the country. A few years ago, I got my jaw broken. I ended up having to go to Vizakali Hospital on emergency.
What was the other guy like?
The other guy, it was not between me and him. He was trying to hit someone else. Oh, I just happened to be in the wrong place. Anyway, it was fractured in three areas. I was in absolute excruciating pain. Wife took me to Ormskirk walking. They said, yeah, definitely broken three places. You have to go tonight to Vizakali because you have to have an emergency operation, which will be a 3.5 hour operation tomorrow morning. You, if we don't do this now, you're in trouble. So, got to Vizakali Hospital. I'm in absolute excruciating pain. I've never fainted in my life, but I was so near fainting because of the pain. I waited, I think, about 5 hours. They knew I was there. They said, yes, the bed's ready for you. All waiting for is a porter to take you up. So, when I eventually did collapse in pain, my wife said, enough of this. And she walked up to the ward where I was going to be put. And they said, we've been waiting for you for hours. She said, we've been waiting for a porter. She said, I'll bring him up myself. There's only one thing in the lift, you know, one floor. We went up to the ward. I went on to the ward. There was a ward of about 6-7 beds. There was one bloke in the corner, and there was me. So it wasn't space. It was this ridiculous bureaucracy in between sort of thing that just... and that's where the blockages are. My mother-in-law, who'd been very ill... we were converting, or about to plan to convert, our garage to so that she could live next door to us. Not something I was terribly keen on, but there we go. That's life, isn't it? But then the staff on the hospital, because she was in the hospital at that stage and she'd been there far too long, she didn't need to be in hospital, got wind of this. And they thought we were after her money. Now, if you met my wife, she adored her mum. There's nothing further from the truth. So they slapped on what they call a doles on her, which means that we then couldn't access the money from her account, which she'd put aside for this particular, to convert the thing. So she stayed in hospital for months and months because they took away your liberty. Now, it's those sorts of things we have to get, because
did you have power of attorney?
No, because once you've had a doles put on you, that's it.
Right.
You haven't got any control over your parents.
So even if you have got power of attorney, when they put that on
you, can't get it.
Right.
You can't. If you've got a doles on you, then you can't. They do it all the time. Mm. All the time. But is that, see, that blocks. But we said, all we are is a family with a daughter who adores her mum, who wants to look after her. Now, she hasn't got a broken leg or anything, but she's old and she's, you know, getting frail and what have you. So the best place she could be is right next to her daughter. But they stopped that from happening. Now, it's that kind of nonsense that we, as a reform government, just need to say, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're not doing that. Actually, if you're waiting in A&E for 4 or 5 hours, actually, you should be in a bed within 20 minutes.
Mm.
There's so much waste, so much incompetence, so much bureaucracy in not only the NHS and the police and local, particularly in local governments, so I know inside out about huge amounts of millions, if not billions, of money that we are wasting.
Well, one thing I talked about, I mean, assuming that in whenever 2027 that we get our councillors into Wirral Borough Council,
supposing
we have control of Wirral Borough Council, what would we do with it?
So
I think probably the first thing I would suggest is that we look at every department.
Yeah.
And we give the assistant director notice. And then you wait, do that, get rid of them.
Yeah.
Then wait 6 months and see if anybody notices.
Yes. Well, I work in local authority. I've done for many years, and I don't enjoy it. But needs must. And I notice over Christmas in where I work, we close down. Apart from the emergency teams and what have you, but the majority of the council, 95% of it, closes down. No one misses a thing. And it's the same when you go on holiday. No one misses a thing because there is so much utter waste going on in local authorities, people who have been there for decades, who get lovely golden handshakes and off they go, and you think you've achieved nothing in your time. Absolutely nothing. So we, as when we get into Lancashire Council, that's something immediately we'll be looking at doing is getting rid of that complete waste. We will be saving at least £5 of every £100 that's spent. Mm. I mean, another example.
I think it could be much more than
that. I think it's much more than that. But we're starting off conservative. I don't want to use that word, but we're starting off because it's very small city. The other thing we're looking at is Ormskirk Hospital has a purpose built accident and emergency department, and it's not been open for decades. Mm. And that then puts pressure on Southport, it puts pressure on Fazakerley, so on and so forth. It doesn't serve Skemmersdale, it doesn't serve Ormskirk, it doesn't serve Burscough. Well, we will be pushing, I know we haven't got control of the NHS, but we will be pushing, if we were in charge of Lancashire Council, to get that reopened. It's common sense again, it takes pressure off over hospitals, mm. and it serves the people properly. You don't have to travel 10-20 miles down rubbish roads to get to Southport or to Fazakerley.
They are rubbish roads, by the way.
They are awful. But and also, when you go to Southport, blocked a lot of the time because of traffic. But these are, again, the pragmatic solutions that we're going to put in place.
You've got a council in Sefton, which looks after Sefton.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't even refurbish the pier.
No, I know. It's just beyond. Local authorities are beyond ridiculous. Mm. And I said to Nigel Farage recently, if we come to government and I'm elected as an MP, I said, you're looking around for cabinet posts. I said, I want one of the most unsexiest things. I want local government, mm. please. I want to come back and I want to do it.
But let's get our councillors elected and let's sort local government at a local level.
Absolutely. Let's just bring some pragmatic solutions to local authorities, and let's just cut out this millions of waste that is going on, and it really is.
And do you think there's going to be a big uplift in council taxes? And
guarantee it. Mm. Guarantee it. Well, we're already seeing it. We've got Rachel from Accounts and Angela Rayner raising, I think it's 7 local authorities already, mm. from between 7.5% and 10%.
Yeah.
I can understand it from a local authority point of view. What other options have they got? They're not getting money from central government. But the only option they've got is to raise their council tax, which is completely and utterly wrong. What we've said is if we got into Lancashire County Council and we were in control, or at least the broker between two other parties, we would freeze council tax at its current rate of 5% now, right. for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And we will make substantive savings.
What within that budget to improve things?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But also just cut so much waste. And there is. I mean, I know from my experience, there are many, many people walking around with clipboards who'd achieve nothing.
Well, one thing I've discussed before here is that in many cases, a lot of the actual councils, you don't often actually meet a council worker. Because everything virtually is outsourced, so all the councils are doing is setting contracts to enable work to be done.
Yeah.
My idea would be don't have the council involved in that. Get a third party to set the contracts. Yeah. Somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know from my own experience. I'm a person who works on the ground, face to face with the public to solve antisocial behaviour and so on and so forth. I have, I think, 6, maybe 7 line managers above me. Why do I need 6 or 7 line managers above me? You just don't.
No.
So let's cut that. And put, again, it's the same as the NHS, put that under frontline services. That's where people need it, is pragmatic solutions.
Right, I'm aware that time's moving on.
Yeah.
I usually finish the podcast with a little...
song? A little dance? No,
you can sing if you want.
No, I want to get votes.
Sure?
I want to get votes. I'll try it away.
A little game. What I've been doing is giving people a subject and a question, and say a question that can be answered either yes or no.
Right.
And ask them to do it.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to change it a little bit today. Okay. I thought, in case you'd been preparing for it. So what I'm going to do is give you a couple of policies,
right?
And say that you can only enact one of them.
Okay.
Which one would you go for?
Right, go on then. Okay.
Okay, would you repeal the Equalities Act or would you repeal the Climate Act?
Oh my goodness me. I'd want to do both, obviously. But the first one, I
so that wouldn't be in it. That wouldn't be a fun game.
The first one, I think climate, because it's billions upon billions that Mad Miliband is wasting. And also, it's just such nonsense. I used to believe it, but now, capture all the carbon you want. Isn't going to make a blind bit of difference. What are they doing?
It's when you look at all the different policies across the board, you know, the carbon capture, the heat pumps, electric vehicles.
Electric cars. One of the biggest scams that is going on is do not buy electric cars. The amount of environmental damage, making the battery, putting it on diesel guggling again.
And when you go to buy, I don't know if you bought a new car recently.
No, I bought a second-hand lovely Mercedes.
I've gone into the showroom to try and buy a new car.
Yeah.
And they won't let you buy a diesel or a petrol car. They insist, no, you know, this one's a hybrid or this one's a electric. You know, this is a really good car. And you know, and the reason is because, of course, they've got quotas.
Yeah.
And if once they get to a certain, they're not reaching the quota of electric cars.
15 grand a car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can see why they want to sell you an electric car.
Just what kind of national policy is it where you say to people, go and sell cars, but if you sell the wrong kind of car, we'll charge you 15 grand. Well, that's really great mode. So yes, I'd go with climate first.
Right. Okay.
Sadly, I would. Yeah. But very quickly follow up with equality as well.
So you could change the constitution to move from a first past the post voting system to a proportional representation
every
system.
Every single time, I can answer that one straight.
Got to give me the other. You can have to do one of these things.
Okay.
So that's one option. So you can have a proportional representation.
Yeah.
Or you can abolish the House of Lords.
Proportional representation,
right?
Yeah, we got to get that right. I mean,
and do you think that's would be actually now as the voted the poll trends are? Do you think in the medium term that would act in reforms to reforms advantage?
I would hope so, but I also do stick by this that if it's the right thing to do, we should
do it anyway.
That's
a good answer.
Yeah, because the only other people that do is in Europe. The only people who have first past the post is our friends in Belarus.
Mm.
Now that's a strange company for us to be in.
I tend to agree with you. It's the right thing, so let's do it, even if it's not in the party's interest. Yeah. And as I say, if the polls go up as they are from at the moment up to in the early 30s, it probably won't be in our interest.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Well, we'll have more than five MPs either way.
Right. Would you abolish building on the green belt?
Yes. 100%, and that's one of our key commitments in West Lancashire is we will, because the green belt definition has been changed by No Brainer Rainer, we will stop building on any green belt because there is plenty of brown, grey, whatever you want to call it, belt that you can build on. There may be exceptional circumstances that might be the accepted rule, but in general, no. We live in a gorgeous part of the country, and we have lovely land. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
So no, we're dead against building on green land.
The final one, which is one of my pet ones, would you? I've abandoned my game now because I can't. Would you abolish the Arts Council?
Do you know, I've never thought about it.
I'll give you 30 seconds.
Well, I've got to say, I don't know enough about it to say yes or no. I would need to find out more. It's the honest and truthful answer. So you tell me, Ken.
I always ask it because it seems to me to be the most obvious thing that we waste money on, in my view.
Right.
Because, I don't know, I'm from a kind of arts background.
Oh, yeah, right.
And what you find with good art is that it will be produced.
It will get through whatever.
Doesn't need a subsidy.
And
all the Arts Council does is subsidise art.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, inevitably, it subsidises art, the art that the Arts Council decide is art. And so, therefore, it's somebody's definition
itself,
of what is art that they're pushing. So, it's actually, it creates terrible art, terrible plays, terrible concerts. Everything's terrible about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of my hobby horses.
Right. Okay. Well, I've never thought about it. Now I have. I would. Yes, I'm with you, Ken. I would slash it immediately.
That's a great answer. Listen, Simon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you, Ken.
I appreciate it. And as I say, we'll be in touch with regard to getting the rest of the troops in.
Thank you very much, Ken. Cheers.
I want my country back, and the country I'm talking about would not tolerate this nonsense.
But now you have a choice. There is a party that will represent you and stand up for common sense.
And when the dam bursts, it will do so spectacularly.
I overturned the biggest ever Conservative majority of 25,500 people.
But if Britain is broken, then logically, Britain needs reform.